السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
وعليكم السلام.
Sarah's back, everybody.
Back with a vengeance.
Okay, just to add some context. So I released the episode 40 Rules of Love Part 3 with Baba yesterday. And then I need to release the episode that I filmed with Neetu at the studio at my house. But I still have 2 sessions left here. And I love this place. So here you are.
Here I am. Here I am in the flesh.
Until you come film at home with me, I just need to get a second camera.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Mm. We were just having lunch trying to figure out what we're going to talk about because we get into such thought-provoking conversations that right now, like, my head is blank. What do you want to talk about?
I know, but when we were in the car talking, it was so... By the way, when you come film at home with me, you're going to see the vibes are really different. Mm. Being in a studio, don't get me wrong, I love it, but it seems so much more, you have the hour, you need to get it done. At home, it was just... But a lot.
Vibes. This is brought to you the ASMR version of Layla's podcast.
So this is episode 32.
Yeah. Ooh. Bienvenue on Layla's podcast. That's it. That's all you get.
See my girls? My girls are fancy.
So what would you like to discuss today so that we can work around...
I'll tell you, the last time you were here, we were meant to discuss relationships. We just kept talking about God.
Yes.
But we were also chaotic, but people loved the chaos. It was good chaos.
Okay.
But I want to try to get like cute, cohesive reels. And every time the commentators will be like, just go with the flow. We don't care about the reels, but the reels is what brought you here.
Yes.
Okay.
That's right.
But also I want us to like, but anyway, we should talk about relationships.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Okay. So where to starting? Okay. Here's a good question to
ask.
Go
for it.
When do you think a relationship is ready for marriage or ready for that next level?
That's a tough one for me. It is a tough one for me because احنا تربينا بالبلاد العربية وبالبيوت المسلمة بس حتى صحباتي المسيحية, you know? But growing up in Jordan and in an Arab household, especially with our, you know, culture and our traditions, I was always told, اللي بده ياكي بفوت من الباب مش من الشباك. That means whoever is serious about you will come in through the door to meet us immediately. He's not going to sneak in through your window. And that means the boyfriend thing isn't a thing, right? And I understand that our generation has changed. We live a completely different life than what our parents lived. Like, we don't even have the same experience. Almost... zero, like the ratio is almost zero. Do you know what I mean? And I understand that we have a lot of fear and a lot of trepidation because we witnessed a lot of the old school marriages fail. They weren't compatible. It was just chaos, right? So we trick ourselves into saying, no, I want to get to know you before. So it's tricky, but my friend said something to me that was very, very interesting and I really liked it. It takes 3 months to figure out if you're dealing with and it takes 6 months to know where this is going. And I like that because I've mentioned this before that alhamdulillah, I'm blessed enough that I have that relationship with my dad. But even if you're a girl and you don't have that relationship, just have a good head on your shoulders and you can get to know that person enough within 6 months and you test the boundaries. If you want to see how they live, if you want to see how they are when problems arise, you have, there are tools to be able to discover these things without crossing certain boundaries. But after 6 months, there's no ring on my finger, you can go.
And what constitutes a boundary when it comes to relationships?
Wait, before what constitutes a boundary, what do you think?
Oh, that's a tricky question as well. I think that pretty much the same thing as you do. I think 3 months, if he doesn't realize that he's interested in being in a relationship with you long term, he will know after 3 months.
Oh, babe, he knows the first week.
Literally. And I think that we as Arab women, when we're in relationships where we try to conform to like westernized way of understanding relationships, is that we always want to compromise and we want to be a little bit more lax and be like, oh, relax, it's fine, it's all good, like whatever he wants, I'm good with it.
I'm going
like,
with the flow.
I'm just going with the flow. Mm. I'm just like, you know, I don't want to be so desperate, like I'm just like living my best life. No, babe. Time is money, money is time.
Facts.
And you are on, your biological clock is ticking.
Facts.
And so the last thing that you want to do is wait around for somebody to decide whether or not you fit the mold.
Facts. Mm. And also, why are you giving them all the power? This is something that kind of, I really came to this realization when I noticed that there's a pattern with girls. And every girl with girlfriends will recognize this. How many friends have you had be in a relationship وهي اللي ناطرة على نار, desperate. When is he going to propose? Is he serious? Is he going to propose? She gives him the ultimatum of, if you don't propose, I'm going to have to leave you. And sometimes he proposes, sometimes he doesn't. It's icky. As a girl, for you to have to venture into those territories, it does not feel good for you, for him. It's just all around, that's a recipe for disaster. To me, that is a recipe for disaster.
So why do they wait?
But wait, before why do they wait? I switched it up in my life because you learn through other people's mistakes as well. And I was like, yeah, I know what I want and it's not that. What I want is a man who wants to marry me. Why would I sit around and wait for a ring and be like, is he going to marry me? Is he going to propose? Is he planning on proposing on my birthday? It's been a year. Like, what is he waiting for? Why the lil azab? Why the self-torture? The healthiest thing to me, especially when it comes to men and women, is that I am just so divine in my feminine because he allows me to be that. He enables that part of me. And he is so divine in his masculine that he wants to marry the divine feminine. He wants it. I'm not the one egging him on and giving him ultimatums. That's insane. That's insane. Like, do you understand how many girls do this to themselves?
They really do. No, they really do. Right.
And I feel really bad for them because they think sometimes, especially with the pop culture and movies, it's like, he's never ready, she's ready, and she makes him ready, and she gives him that ultimatum, and he chases her up the balcony and confesses his undying love. That's stupid.
Can I play devil's advocate, though?
Oh.
What happens, though, do you think that it could be partially true because women have now been given the flexibility and freedom to decide? Because, you know, back in the days, it was like, الرجال بيجي على البيت, and then he, like, asks for your hand, and you have this kind of grace period of getting to know the guy, and if you like him, you get married. If you don't, you don't.
Mm.
But now it's like, no, get to know him, see what you think, make up your mind, have an opinion about it. Do you feel like there's like this allotted pressure where the girl's like, I don't want to mess this up, so that's why I'm taking my time. I want to make sure that I don't disappoint my family or disappoint my parents in picking the wrong guy.
That could play a factor. I haven't really seen it in real life. I would, yet it, that's actually the point from which women are operating.
Mm-hmm.
It's just unfortunately not really the case.
So if somebody wants to be in a relationship with you, what do you constitute as boundaries? Like working within the boundaries of relationships?
Before that, what do you think? Do
you
think
girls I want to know what you think.
But you can't, I have to ask you back.
No. Well, if it flows, it flows. Tell me right now.
What my personal boundaries?
Or what a girl should have as a personal boundary. Because they could say, for example, a relationship, I want to be in a relationship where I get to travel with him, but maybe I'm from a family that doesn't allow me to travel with the guy, or maybe like...
Are you talking boyfriend, girlfriend, or marriage here?
You tell me.
So boyfriend, girlfriend is not a thing I'm into.
Okay. Well, it's then just, it does not expand on that for the girly pops that are listening.
For the girly pops, in this day and age, me personally, at the age that I'm at with the knowledge that I have and just my relationship with Allah, I'm not trying to be nobody's girlfriend. Why?
Mm.
Honestly, give me one reason why.
I can't. I'm in the same boat as you. I'm trying to play devil's advocate here.
Give me one reason why I would take everything. But then maybe for me, it's a little bit of a different topic because I, by the grace of God, alhamdulillah, built myself up from the ground up. You know what I mean? Went through all the trenches on my own, survived horrible nightmares on my own, just with God by my side. And I find it very hard now. بعد ما I built myself up وصرت إشي إنه I would hope إنه برفع الراس. Like you would, because men care about status. So after I've worked on being a woman who can carry that status, now you want me? You know what I mean? But you want me as a girlfriend? Nah, wifey. Wifey. Because I'm not bringing you into my life that I've built with God holding my hand, and I bring an unstable factor that could or could not stay, that could or could not ruin me. Why? Why?
Yeah.
Why? No.
Why would Lee Mathers. Lee Mathers.
Like, why would I do that? And again, some people will tell you, but there are people that have been boyfriend and girlfriend for a year or two and they got married and they're really happy. That's great for them. And maybe at the time, the circumstance, it just worked out. Where I am at in my life now, I can't go to my dad and be like, hey, meet my boyfriend.
Fact.
Haram.
Yeah.
They go to Baba, or the boyfriend. Yeah, it's like, yeah. I just, especially, my personal boundary is I just want a man who meets me and knows. Because most of these men that are married, they will tell you, I knew the second I laid eyes on her. I knew. So if you see it happen for other people, why wouldn't it happen for you? Why wouldn't you be able to manifest it? Why wouldn't God bless you the way he's blessed others, you know? And if you genuinely believe it, then you walk as such. And I've just reached a stage in my life where I will walk as the woman I want to be, who deserves the kind of man that she wants, mm-hmm. you know? So if I want a man who looks at me and just knows and goes after it, and that's it, you're my wife, I need to walk around like that kind of woman, mm-hmm. which means like like the horse blinds, you know what yeah. I mean? They're on. I'm not straying left or right. But then when they've approached, there is a metric, obviously, to figure out, are they love bombing me? Are they gaslighting me? Are they just saying what they think I want to hear? Because men will always tell you what you want to hear. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To me, it's a very simple thing of a man, Timmy. You want to know what a real man is? The definition of manhood to me, it's the one metric where I'm like, I know or I don't know. A man does what he says he's going to do. No ifs, ands, or buts. I don't want to hear it.
Amen.
I don't want to hear it. If you are a man, you do what you say you're going to do. نقطة لف الصفحة, please.
Bizzupt. And this is something that I think a lot of women who are in relationships that haven't worked out, where they're like, he said all this stuff to me. He said he was going to wait around. Mm-mm-mm. He said we were going to live in this country. He said he was going to get me a house. He said he was going to... And there is no follow through. Wow. Actions speak louder than words, as cheesy as that sounds. Like, if you are in a relationship with a guy who said one thing and did another, he's literally telling you who he is. Literally. Believe it. Like, that's all you need.
Facts.
And it's interesting when you said before, just jumping off of what you said five seconds ago, I said something recently on my podcast, which was ruffling a few tail feathers.
We love it.
I mean, it's just like, you know, and I said, a man who is not the right guy for you, he will come and present himself as a test. And the way that he susses you out and the way he sniffs out those insecurities in you, he will try and find anything that is a deficiency that is within your body that he will try to exploit. If he sees that you're an insecure, girl, he's going to try and find a way to come in and like protect that insecurity so that you rely on him for that validation. Mm. If you're a type of girl that like is really independent and but you show this kind of need for codependency, he will find that codependency and he'll make you latch onto him. And a lot of people are like, no, this means that men are all toxic. It's like, you have to think of it, predator versus prey. Mm. Men are designed and hardwired to hunt. Mm-hmm. So if they look at you, they're going to decide, am I going to hook up with this person or am I not going to hook up with this person? Am I going to find something to exploit or am I not? Because they need to see themselves reflected in that relationship.
Absolutely.
If they don't see themselves reflected, they're not going to bother with it. You think they're up for a challenge? You think they're like, I'm sitting around, oh, I want to make my life so much more difficult? No, they don't. They want an easy, easy life. Mm. It's the man who is a true man that can see through your
facade,
the mask that you wear, the type of masculine energy that you're trying to lead with. He'll see through that and he will find a way to just easily slide himself in there where you're like, oh, you see me. You see me for who I really am. Yeah. And I see you, boo. Don't worry, I see you.
Yeah, but to also piggyback off of what you're saying, when I was filming with Neetu at home, which is the episode that's coming out before this, Bismillah, she was talking about the avoidant attachment and the anxious attachment, okay? And she was saying, and she said a point, she said usually with the avoidant and the anxious, they usually attract each other. And she was like, what? So I told her, I'm like, do you know why that happens? There's a reason that happens. Again, Eckhart Tolle, the pain body, I've said it a million times, but you will always attract the person who will bring out the wounds in you that need to be healed. And that's God sending you your medicine. And it's a bitter medicine because it may seem like a punishment. It may seem like your world is crumbling around you, but it's just changing the lens from which you view things. Mm-hmm. And if you see that someone has come and they've made you realize, oh, there's a wound inside me that needed healing, either a fear of abandonment, insecurity, lack of self-confidence, a childhood trauma, God will send these people your way just to remind you, yo, there's something there that needs to be fixed. Fix it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So with what you're saying about these men as well, I think certain women, and it's women are fragile by nature. Mm-hmm. It's this is how we're designed. It's how we're built. And we weren't meant to be this masculine, this rough and tough, like you and me, how we are, like yalla.
Bilgu. We are so yalla. We're the yallaist.
We're the yallaist.
We really are.
It's not meant to be this way. Mm-hmm. We're not meant to be this yalla.
Yeah, yeah, you know yeah. But I mean? We're just waiting for the right guys to come along to like relinquish this yallaness.
Yeah.
So that we can just like lift the rizal out of rizal and then just be like murtahin.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Sorry, guys. I actually speak Arabic, but I'm just like trying to say the first, but
it's okay. My jumhud actually doesn't, most of them aren't Arabic speaking. That's why I usually translate.
Oh, great. Yeah. Okay. Well, I was going to touch base on what you were saying, which I think is really interesting about the avoidant and the attachment, the anxious attached. People like to throw out the term like narcissistic. Oh, he's narcissist. He's such a narcissist. Okay. What's interesting is that there are a lot of correlations between somebody who is avoidant and somebody who is narcissistic. They are both self-centered. They think of the self. They are self-oriented.
There's a hair stuck. There we go.
Hair stuck in your mouth. They do not know how to deal with...
Wait, I want you to say that again because I lost what you're saying. You started saying by some people think... Say it again.
Okay, yeah.
Sorry. So,
like people generally... Generally speaking, people love to throw out the term narcissist. Like, oh, you're a narcissist, dank. You're just such a narcissist, blah, 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 blah. And a lot of the time they don't understand that there is a lot of similarities and correlations between somebody who's avoidant and somebody who is narcissistic. Mm-hmm. So the avoidant and the narcissist share in the fact that they are, let's just say, self-centered, incredibly serving of the self, number one. Number two, they do not have a clear understanding how to emotionally regulate. Mm-hmm. They also lack emotional maturity and self-awareness. Mm-hmm. And they put themselves in situations where the blame is, or the onus is often on the other person and not themselves. Mm. So yes, the avoidant might avoid the conversation or evade any type of responsibility, but it doesn't necessarily mean that he's narcissistic. It doesn't mean that he's doing this in a way that is driven by a lack of remorse or driven by, you know, a hidden agenda. Yeah, by, you know, a hidden agenda or a pathology that you can't understand, like a neurotypical person would understand. Mm-hmm. And I think that, do I think a lot of people are narcissistic or have narcissistic tendencies? Sure. But is everybody avoidant? No. And I think you and I briefly spoke about the fact that I have a hard time accepting that men generally are more avoidant. I think that the world has given them a framework so that they don't have to justify themselves to people. And that can be considered as avoidant. Like, I don't want to deal with my emotions. I don't want to talk about things. Yeah. But I don't necessarily mean that that's by design. I think that that is just like it's more nature versus nurture, if that makes sense.
It does.
But going back to what I asked you in the beginning, because I really think it's important to outline. When we talk about dating, the way that you date in your 20s is not how you date in your 30s. And how have you changed in terms of how you think about dating in your 20s versus how you think about it in your 30s?
Oy. Okay, wait, because I never discuss my personal life on my podcast, but I will. Let me figure out how I'm going to do this. Actually, I know how I'll do this. Feminism f***ed with me a lot.
Okay.
Okay. Feminism really, really ruined. Didn't ruin. It was a learning curve. That was one of those curveballs that life threw my way. That was a really learning experience. When I was in my 20s, even if I didn't necessarily abide by the whole "it's my body, I'll do what I want, free the nipple," that whole movement, I was affected by it. Watching the Kardashians online, seeing people do whatever they, you know, it. You kind this fake sense of empowerment, like, yeah, that is what a woman's supposed to do. That's why I sympathize with a lot of these feminists. I get it. I was, you know what I mean? I used to think that was the way it was. And then this whole dating and being powerful and do whatever you want and kind of be like a boss babe when you're stupid in your 20s. I don't even know how that mixes. You know, you don't even know who you are. But I thought, when I was young, and then you get affected with peer pressure because your friends are dating, and you know what I mean? So I rode that bandwagon for a little bit, and it was disastrous. I didn't like it, and I hopped off that bandwagon immediately. Like,
but you have that self-awareness to know that you had to jump off that bandwagon through your experience. How many people people do you know that look back on their 20s? Because there's a lot of people that I would say can not attest to the fact that, like, when they look back on their teens, they're like, oh yeah, I was young, I was silly, I was stupid, I made mistakes, etc. But how many of them wanted to go back to their behavior and go like, I actually didn't know any better. I didn't know any better. So for you, would you blame that on like lack of intelligence, lack of awareness, lack of experience? What was it?
I think it's a combination of everything. I think it's also a deep combination of self-sabotage and not recognizing my self-worth. It's the one thing I had the most trouble with till this very day, my inability to see my self-worth truly. And that's why I don't think I would never give myself credit for jumping off the bandwagon. God forced me off that bandwagon. You best believe Allah forced me off that bandwagon. It's very interesting when girls were getting guys left, right, and center. God, close that door for me. Mm-hmm. Shut it. And it messes with you. You're just like, am I not pretty? Are guys not attracted to me? Why am I not getting what my friends are getting? And then God pushed me off that bandwagon. Babe, when I say dragged me by my hair off that bandwagon. Mm-hmm. And it's a rude awakening and it's painful, but it's the best thing that ever happened to me. Mm-hmm. I didn't waste my 20s dating around. I'll say that. But also, I have to add, I think my life is a little different. The factors that play in, I had no money. Babe, like, when you're trying to figure out how to buy a pack of noodles, it's very hard to kind of focus on other things. So I was facing other trials and tribulations. But yeah, of course, at the time, did I just want someone to, like, come hug me or hold my hand or take me to the movies? Absolutely. But I'm glad it didn't happen. It would have thwarted my journey. My experience is a little different.
Are you happy for building thicker skin?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Do you feel like you're the person you wish that you had when you were younger?
1,000%. This is what I said with my episode with Nita coming out right before this. I said that there is two ways. There was one metric I used to use to measure where I'm at in life and if I needed to correct course. And it was one simple question. Is Allah happy with what I'm doing right now? If the Prophet ﷺ was sitting right in front of me, would he be okay with what I'm doing? And it was a clear cut yes or no. مش بس إنه. It was a clear cut yes or no. And if I got a no, then I needed to course correct, right? And if I got a yes, then it was like, okay, keep doing what you're doing. And if I got a maybe, then it was like, okay, you're on the right track, but you're half-assing it. Go full throttle. Full throttle.
Go whole ass it.
Full throttle. You know? And then I added another question under that. That is the most important question. And then the second question was, would 13-year-old Layla feel safe with you? And safe was the most important word because I didn't feel safe my whole life.
I can
attest. My whole life. Mm. And then most of the male people that I attracted into my life fed into that lack of safety. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because men are supposed to want to protect by nature, right? And I attracted the opposite of that.
And it goes back to what I was saying before, where it's like, if you're going to deal with somebody who's toxic, they're going to try and find any deficiency in you and they will exploit it. So if you're a person who needs safety, they might regulate that safety in the beginning, but then they'll just take it and twist and turn it into an emotional pretzel where you don't even know which way is up.
What's the word I'm looking for? They pull the rug right under you.
Yeah, they pull the rug from underneath you.
Right, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And you're just falling into an abyss. It's crazy.
Absolutely. And the thing is, sometimes it's like, question, like, do we blame them for it? Or is it because they had bad teachings and they didn't course correct? Or do you feel like it's like people are deliberately like that? Like, do you think somebody who is a toxic person is intentionally toxic?
Some people are, yeah. Of course.
How so?
Of course, some people know exactly what they're doing. You'd be surprised, there are some psychopaths and sociopaths that are very self-actualized and they know exactly what they are. And there are some who aren't. Mm-hmm. Because such is life, you know? Just same with everyday people who don't have a sort of psychopathy. They can be self-actualized and they can be not self-actualized. I think they fall under the same umbrella. I think there are also non-psychotic people who purposefully hurt people. Mm-hmm. It happens. What do you think?
Well, I think I mentioned this last time that we were chatting, but I read a book recently by Dr. Patrick Gaynor, who talks about, I mean, she's a diagnosed sociopath and she wrote a memoir called Sociopath.
You told me about this.
About being a sociopath. And what was really interesting is that she humanized her experience in the sense that psychopaths are completely different. I don't think that there's any way to, like, a psychopath cannot go through reform.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There is no like reformation for a psychopath. But a sociopath, there is a possibility. But the problem is that they lump up through, you know, the psychology checklist, they lump them up in the same thing, like antisocial personality disorder and psychopathy are very much like one and the same thing. Mm-hmm. But with sociopaths, what she was trying to refer to was the fact that like sociopaths have a feeling that bubbles up to the surface that they have to release. It's like an itch they need to scratch. And if they don't find ways to exercise that itch, and that feeling is like feeling of utter like loneliness, utter lack of control. It boils down to something that like registers in their spindle neurons where they have to like, they just have to release it. And that's why they resort a lot of the time to physical violence, because it gives them that rush of endorphins. It gives them that feeling, because every other feeling that they have, whether it's like remorse or empathy or, you know, compassion or any of those, they do feel it, but it's not as strong. It's not as loud. And so with what Dr. Patrick was talking about is that she was saying that like, she explained it in the sense that like, I feel it and the frustration is not getting that maximum feeling. So when it explodes, I have to do something, whether it's like unlawful, illegal, something to like push it. And so I think with sociopaths, they get a rush out of hurting somebody, but then they don't get the ramifications of that hurt because they don't have empathy or compassion. Like they don't feel guilty for what they do, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they don't, they're not aware of what they do. So I think it's really different if you're having a relationship with somebody who's psychopathic versus somebody who's sociopathic versus somebody who's narcissistic. Yeah. And I think, are they the same side of the same coin? Maybe, but I wouldn't categorize, after reading that book on sociopaths, I wouldn't categorize psychopaths and sociopaths in the same category. And I wouldn't necessarily categorize narcissists and sociopaths in the same category.
I get what you're saying, but your question was, do you think they're aware that they're hurting you?
Yeah.
And I, with all three, I think in some cases they could be, and in some cases they couldn't be.
True.
Yes. That's what I was trying to say. Yes. So it's not necessarily lumping them up together, because psychopaths and sociopaths are different. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they'd be under the same name.
Yeah. Well, they were for a long time, and then they got separated.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah.
Well, I've always known them as separate.
Now, but like usually they put psychopathy when it's not like...
when it's not fully diagnosed.
Yeah, it's like under antisocial personality disorder.
Yeah. That's different. I'm saying like once you're khalas, like now we're talking about psychopathy, sociopaths, and then narcissists. Forget that not lumping them together. Just to answer your question with either three, I think some of them are self-actualized and some of them aren't. Mm-hmm. Whether they're able to feel remorse, have empathy, that's a different question. Mm-hmm. But are they aware of what they're doing? Yeah. They can be.
Yeah, and this craziest thing is that I think post the pandemic, I think that we exploited, or like we had this massive boom of like narcissists coming to the surface. It was like because it was in line with social media and the rise of social media, people have become way more self-serving, way more narcissistic, way more like into the self and like their vanity and their self like aggrandizement. I feel like it's absolutely like gone off the roof.
That's why I say I could never be with someone, a man who's on social media, especially as a model or a fashion influencer or a fitness dude. Don't get me wrong, some of these videos, especially when they're dancing and they're funny, I think it's so wholesome and it's a feel-good video. And they're, mashallah, very attractive people and obviously self-disciplined and work on themselves. But I can't be with a dude who looks at himself in the mirror when I look at myself in the mirror. I can't be with a guy who's on social media. I'm one of those girls that I'm on social media, but I'm into like, if I open your page and I see zero posts and like 50 followers and 50, like 50-50, you know what I mean? I'm like, ooh. What was that meme? Amazing, give me 14.
Yes. Also, if guys have pictures of themselves at the gym, I can't. I'm sorry. No. If you're in the bathroom gym and you're shirtless and you're sweating profusely and you've got this like, let me flex. No.
I agree.
I agree.
I was going to say some of them are like fitness coaches.
I don't care.
I know. So the thing is, it's a double-edged sword, because I understand a lot of people will tell you we live in a day and age where social media is your marketing. Like there's this hairdresser, I believe she's African-American in America, and she does the braids and the boho braids and the schmedium and I don't know what they call it. Mm-hmm. And I'm obsessed with her videos. Mm-hmm. I'm not black. Mm-hmm. I don't live in America. I'm never getting that hairstyle. I'm obsessed with her videos. Like I'm just, every time, like I'm scrolling, you know? And I had seen another hairdresser just saying, this day and age, social media is a marketing tool.
Yeah,
but she's now, because of her social media and how it's blown up, she's fully booked months in advance. That's insane.
That's mashallah. Yes, as a marketing, that is a mashallah.
But with the fitness dudes, some of them are coaches.
That's true. But I'm saying, like, you're talking about a person that you're going to, like, end up marrying. I highly doubt that
you're
gonna...
I'm talking about influencers, like men who are on social media.
Oh, you're talking about actual influencers. Okay, yes. Yeah. Okay, then in that case,
a fitness coach, I can't.
Yeah.
You're not my man.
But it's just too much. I just feel like it's just very sort of like, look at me in the mirror.
I can't.
And I can't do it. I also, this was something that I spoke about as well. It was like, I didn't put it into the podcast, but that I did with Neetu. Hi, Neetu. The men who follow women on Instagram. How do you feel about that? Like, if you have, for example, your husband, if he's following a lot of girls on Instagram, how do you feel?
Who are the girls?
You tell me.
I'm not for it.
Okay, like none?
No, not none. But I'm just, it depends.
Like people he knows that are friends with you or friends
people
that he's
with. People he knows and people you grew up with. Like I have my high school girlfriends and guy friends vibes.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But then also boundaries. Like I'm not crossing certain, like khalas. Mm. You know what I mean? But I think it's different for men and women. Yes, I'm setting a double standard. I fully am setting a double standard, okay? Mm. I think it's different for men and women. I think with women, when they're on social media and they get certain DMs, they're not answering a lot of the guys in the DMs. They're just not. We just don't care. But guys are the ones sliding in said DMs. So I don't like a man who's active on social media, follows a lot of girls, and slides like a little greasy slug into DMs. It's icky. بعدين, I'm gonna أزيد من الشعر بيت. Usually, these men are married. Do you know how icky it is? Boys, let me tell you something.
Yeah. But it's interesting that married, on your topic, just
before no you said... No one is as ballsy as a male man, as a married man.
As a male man.
As a male
man. No one is mailed as a male man.
No one, babe, honestly, no one has the gall, the audacity, as ballsy as married men.
Yeah.
Just they slide into your DMs like a greasy little meatball.
Married men have in their minds nothing to lose and everything to gain.
See, you say this to me, but to me, it's like, you know, you lost your karame. Because when I see married, when my girlfriends come and tell me a married man slid into their DMs or I see one try to slide into mine, I feel so disgusted by you. Because I'm a woman. The first thing that comes to my mind is if that was my man and he's sliding into it, it's disgusting. Mm-hmm. Like with, it's lazy. It's disgusting. You're like, I have the ick.
I think a lot of the time with these married men, and this is not to give them any excuse. I you know, we can hang them. We'll give them the rope and they can hang themselves. It's that they see people, whether it's like you or your friends or whatever, you represent the fantasy, not the reality. So in their minds, they want to enter the fantasy world. So they're going to be like, oh, I'm going to give this a shot. Because in the real world, before I got married, before I had three kids, before I sorted my life out, I would have never dared to approach this woman. Now, I might as well, you know, have fun.
That's insane.
I know, it's crazy. It's wild. But then again, it depends. Because I found like a lot of people who are in relationships where the woman was the one chasing the man, and she was the one who led first, and she was the one who kind of forced this like idea of marriage.
Like I said, the ultimatum.
Or she got pregnant beforehand and they had to get married for whatever circumstances. Mm-hmm. The man is always looking elsewhere because he didn't pick her. She picked him. So when a man doesn't pick you and decides you're the one I want to pursue...
He's never going to pick you.
He's never going to pick
you. Even if he married you. Is that not crazy?
Even if he married you.
And fathered your children.
Oh, absolutely.
He still did not pick you.
Exactly.
That's why also in some cases you have the... We've been together for 10 years and have two kids and he never put a ring on it.
Yeah.
What?
And it happens. It happens more times than we were like... Click. Can we click for that?
I wanted to say another thing, Kamal, that you said, because I also touched base on, I'm struggling. I also had mentioned this, not on my podcast, after. Okay. So two things. Okay. I was talking to Neetu on the podcast and we had said that there needs to be a fine line between self-preservation and empathy, right? Because like you said, now we have thick skin and there is a form of self-preservation, obviously. Like, you protect yourself, you can sense danger. But then also, it's like, where's the fine line between that and empathy and being able to differentiate? And I said a sentence, and she heard, it was off camera, and she heard it, she's like, that needs to go into the podcast.
Go ahead.
Okay, I wrote it down.
Go ahead.
Are we ready?
Read it out to the masses.
Okay. All right?
Mm.
Okay, this is what I said. Self-preservation without empathy is selfishness. Empathy without self-preservation is foolishness. Because if you are self-preserving because you've been through things, right? But to the point where you have no empathy, you're just selfish. You're literally one of those narcissistic, selfish people going throughout this life. And no, I need to protect my peace. Fine, okay? But then on the other hand, which I've spoken about this at length, if you are extremely empathetic, where there is no sense of self-preservation at all, you're being walked all over, you're being treated like a dog, that's just foolishness.
Mm-hmm. And what are we if we are not people pleasers when we do that?
Yeah.
I agree with you. I 100% agree with you. And I think a lot of the times, whether it's friends, because I'm not like this, I'm the least people pleaser person. People.
Oh, yeah. I asked her once, I bought a new purse and I asked her, I was like, what do you think? You were like, I wouldn't wear it, but it's cute. I was like, yes, I love this girl. Immediately, I was like, I love this girl. She's just not going to lie to you.
Not going to lie. And look, where are the friends that are like this? Because honestly, like, I'm so glad I got rid of all of like the peasanty friends that I had before. Such peasants. And like, bearing in mind, I used to call people who I thought were like really just like beneath the situation, beneath the surface, beneath all of that, peasants. And a lot of people used to get so offended. They're like, how dare you call them peasants? I was like, do you know how long I had to get there? Like how long it took for me to get there where I had to put you in the peasant category?
Yeah.
Peasantry. Absolute peasantry. But I totally agree with you. And I think that...
Go on. He asked if you could come check on the footage.
How dare you?
Because Baba's mic last time, haram, cut 10
Does he minutes. Want to check it now? Should we tell
no,
him?
No, no, no. He just, I think, opened and just took a look at the camera.
That was a train of thought.
Peasants. And we're right back there.
And we're right back there. Okay, let's see. What else could we say?
So there was another thing I wanted to say. Inshallah, you'll remember what you wanted to say. I was also telling, this was an interesting one. Okay? Let me know what you think.
Okay.
So I was talking to someone, and then they were complaining and venting about this not so great partner that they were with. Okay? And then they made a statement, and it was really interesting. So this person said to me, yeah, I think I need to end this relationship. It's just not the right person for me. And I was like, yeah, you're right. And then I took a step back, and I was like, no, actually, I take it back. She's like, what do you mean? I'm like, no, I take it back. I disagree that it's not the right person for you. With how weak you are right now, with what you're allowing yourself to go through, with how little you think of yourself, that's the exact person for you. Because they're going to come, and they are going to pick at your wounds, and they are going to infect your wounds, and they're going to make them so much worse just so you feel even worse about yourself. Because such is life. If you have a wound that isn't healed, it will fester, and you are going to attract flies to it. And lo and behold, this is your fly. And it's just the right person for who you are right now.
I agree with you. And
do you get what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying, and I'm picking up what you're putting down. And I will tell you why I agree with this, because I also spoke to a friend recently, and this was on a slightly different angle to yours, but somewhat similar, which is that if you are a type of woman that has nothing for yourself, or your self-actualization has not come with struggle or grit or rigor, then you are a blank canvas where a man can just imprint on you. Whatever it is.
Of course.
So you can have situations as well as like, you know, circumstances in relationships where you end up being in a relationship with somebody who's toxic or somebody who's avoidant or somebody who is narcissistic or whatnot. And you're like, why me? Why is the situation? If you are the kind of person that isn't able to have a sense of like a personality, a sense of culture, a sense of identity beyond the relationship, he will imprint whatever he wants onto you. And that's the hill that you're going to die on.
So I understand what you're saying, and I agree. It's just that you seldom find a woman today who's a blank canvas. The thing is, they're not a blank canvas. There's a rip here, there's a hole there, there's a little stain there, and that's what makes up your insecurity, your past experiences, your lack of self-confidence, your inner child wound, your daddy issues, your mommy issues. So, yeah, it's best blank canvas, and we can come imprint. عندك a hole, وصار الزلمة, he's the one gonna come and stitch it with his thread that's been dipped in frog poison.
Mm-hmm.
So, what do you do then? What do you do with that?
I think that women in general, going back to the whole idea of relationships that you and I have chatted about, if you expect a man to come correct to you, you need to be correct.
Yeah.
You need to sort yourself out. You need to get all of your ducks in a row, and you need to realize, like, does he like me? Does he find me interesting? Does he find me attractive? Am I more attractive than this girl? Do you like him? Are you interested in him? Yeah. Do you think he's the right guy for you? Like, reorient the conversation, change the perspective, and make it a you to him, not rather than him to you.
That's what I always say. I agree. I fully agree with you. But how many times have you spoken to a girl and everything she's telling, you don't know this guy, you've never met this guy that she's, but everything you know about him is through her.
Absolutely.
And if you had to paint a picture of him, he's Ted Bundy. Yes. Based on what she told you. Mm-hmm. But then you'll be like, okay, why are you with him? I love him. Mm-hmm. But daddy, I love him.
Yeah, Ariel, but daddy, I love him. And Ariel, she was a ginger. I mean...
But listen, I have a weakness for gingers. I'm a Ron Weasley kind of girl.
Well, you know, it's fine.
When
it's
he and Hermione got together, I was like, ooh, sweet freedom.
All those Zingerbeal babies.
I have a weakness for gingers.
Well, you know. Okay, we'll have to cut that out of the podcast.
I'm
Jacqueline.
Even Jessica Chastain with her ginger hair.
Yeah. I feel you.
MashaAllah.
Yes, MashaAllah.
Tabarakallah.
Tabarakallahs. Where were we? Okay, yes, I completely agree with you. And I think it's like you and I have spoken about this on your podcast, on my podcast, where we were like privately, publicly, all of the illies. Know thyself. Know thyself. And the only way that you can know thyself is if you know God.
I was just about to say, there is a saying in Islam, من عرف نفسه عرف الله.
بالضبط.
He who knows himself. Knows Allah.
Me, Abel, me, yeah. Let's sing and praise it. Guys, this is actually...
I don't know what just happened.
This is the concert that you've been invited to.
This is the last time you get that kind of show for free.
I'll be here till Thursday, everyone. How long do
we have some time. I think we have like ربع ساعة.
Okay.
Yeah, من عرف نفسه عرف الله. My dad always says this to me. To know yourself is to know God. What could be more important?
I know.
And it's not just to know yourself through hidden lies. People always try to see themselves and get to know themselves through rose-colored glasses because they never want to actually take a deep look in the mirror and recognize what is horribly wrong with them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay, because what is horribly wrong can suddenly become magically right. But how will it happen if you don't just face it? Wallah, nafsi bas ahki lil nas, just get over the denial. Mm-hmm. Just do yourself a favor. Just get over it. Let's just pass this conversation. Get over the denial. Mm-hmm. Let's get to the nitty gritty. Do it.
Do it. Feel it.
You know what
Live
I mean?
It. I completely agree with you. And I would actually say that a lot of times, and I've said this on my podcast, that women who get into relationships, 9 times out of 10, they don't know what they want.
But the men too.
Yeah.
But the men too.
But we're talking about for the girly pops.
Are we? Just talking about the girly pops?
No. I just want to say that for the girly pops.
Okay.
You don't know who you want. You don't know what you want in a relationship. And we've had conversations with each other off camera where it's just like, what do you want in a relationship? If you can't answer that right now in 0.5 seconds, you do not know what you want. And also, you don't know how to make dua. If you're trying to ask God to help guide this person into your life, because he's already there, you have to believe. It's not a question of how. It's not a question of, you know, why. It's a question of when.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a question of if. It's a question of when.
Mm-hmm.
So if you believe, like, wholeheartedly that you're going to find someone, you're going to find someone. Like, he's waiting just to insert himself into your life and to make himself known. You just have to put yourself in a position where you are so elevated, you have climbed up that self-mastery ladder that you are ready to receive him, because you are not going to get the right person for you at the wrong time when you are not fully formed.
Yeah, I'm not for that. Right person, wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't work.
Yeah, it's wrong person, wrong time.
Yeah.
And completely. And I think also and someone actually asked me in another podcast, they were like, is it possible to grow and learn and become self-actualized together in a relationship? And my answer was like, absolutely not. You have to grow separately to know who you are, because by the time you come back together, you might not want the same things.
I'll disagree.
Okay, go ahead.
I will disagree.
She's gonna disagree. Let's
hear it. I'm gonna disagree for one reason.
Okay.
It's encouraged to get married young.
Okay.
If you were married at 20,
mm-hmm.
if I was married at 20,
mm-hmm.
bro, I don't know my head from my feet. What do you mean?
Yeah, but you're married at that time,
Yes.
When you're married at that time, you take the other person into consideration. If you have the privilege of
not necessarily. Not necessarily. Why? Because babe, there are people that are married at 35. Yeah. You would think that they're self-actualized. You would think.
Yeah.
That they would recognize, oh, I'm married. I need to actually consider my partner.
Yeah.
Who might be the father or mother of my children.
Yeah.
No. How dare you? What are you?
True.
What are you, deluded?
But are we talking about people who are self-actualized or people who are not?
No, you're talking about can they grow together?
Yes, I don't think they can. Sorry.
I think they can.
I can't.
I do think they can because I've seen people who, and but this is where the fitrah comes in. Fitrah is your innate nature, who you are at your core. Mm-hmm. And some people whose fitrah is genuinely pure, they're able to go through the trenches together and grow. Because I get what you're saying, but you could grow and then get together. Mm-hmm. And then God forbid, 5 years down the line, you lose a child. Someone loses it. Another test is thrown your way that you mm-hmm. haven't faced. Shubd illak, sorry, I need to go learn and discover it for myself and then come back together. Mm-hmm. There needs to reach a point where it's like, no, we're doing this together. Mm-hmm. Even if it's separately. Because even if you're married and bound, you have your own internal journey. Mm-hmm. But with your partner.
Mm.
Mm. Mm. Is that not what you would want in your partner?
Yes, I agree. I also want to bring up conversations that our mothers have with us. A lot of the time, and this is not only just my mother, it's just like mothers in general. Yum. When we are in, when we're around like the majlis, or if we're sitting down at like making tabbouleh together, all the mamas and the aunties and the sitats and the amats come together. And what I've recognized, and tell me if this has happened with you, is that they always say like, بدك رجال 70%. Okay, you want a guy to come correct for you 70% of the time. And the other time, he'll change for you. He'll change his stuff for you. Like, like basic silly things. Like, I don't want a guy who smokes, for example, okay? And it's just like, it's okay. If you have a guy who comes and smokes, he'll quit for you. Or he'll do things for you. And this is the mentality of the younger generation because it was a different time. The older generation because it was a different time and you could course correct within the relationship because divorce was frowned upon. You would stick it till the end because that's what was, you know, designed by society for you, et cetera, et cetera. But it's like now, like maybe I don't want somebody who already smokes. Or maybe you have a person who has these like capabilities of smoking that he actually starts smoking after you get married to him. So the idea that like, you can change a part, like this fantasy that we're being raised with as young girls, that a man will change for you and it's guaranteed to happen.
No, ridiculous.
It never does.
I agree. Okay. I agree with you. But again, I think it's a fine line. I really do. I think it's a fine line between expecting someone to change for you, which is a ridiculous self-sabotaging expectation, mm-hmm. but also being with someone who has enough self-awareness, enough self-love and also love for you to recognize that there will always need to be a change and a sense of adapting and a sense of compromise when you are bringing a complete different entity into your life, as in getting into a relationship. Mm-hmm. You will never meet someone now who's going to be 100% perfect and you're going to be 100% perfect and you're going to come together and you're like, that's it. They don't need to change anything. And he's going to be like, she's Jannan. Mm-hmm. She doesn't need to change anything. Mm-hmm. There's always going to be a sense of things that need to change. Mm. It's just, and the only constant in life is change. بس تغيير عن تغيير بفرق. If you come to me already a heavy smoker, or like you said, or abusive, or kind of aggressive with your words, and you just, your first thing is to insult or yell, because I hear yelling, I shut down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, في أشياء ما بتتغير. في أشياء مش مكتوب لي. يعني you can go. خلاص. We don't need to even bother getting together and changing it. بس في أشياء كمان I would hope that the person that comes into my life is open enough for change, because I would hope that I would be open enough for change to accommodate. Mm-hmm. It's the accommodating.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different, they're two different things and it's hard to differentiate. It's like when we were literally talking هلا وإحنا طالعين فوق, and I was telling you someone had said something to me and I was almost gaslit into being like, yeah, that's right, they're so right. And you came to me and you're like, hey, no, that's not right.
Then what is the difference between sacrifice and compromise in a relationship?
In the definition of the word.
Because a lot of people will say like, oh, I was compromising with him and I changed a lot of myself and I reoriented myself to fit his narrative. But that's the truth. You're dealing with people who are like that. Like, oh, nahna, we're compromising. It's totally chilled. Like, we like love each other, but he didn't really do much. I was the one who changed for everything.
That's different. You're talking about, this is again, unhealthy. And this is girls
But how many of your friends are in unhealthy relationships?
They can go stay in that unhealthy relationship as long as they need to until one day they either marry them, pop kids, and end up divorced, which would be a tragedy, and I'm always advocating against it, or one day they wake up and they get out of it. But I'm also very aware, as much as I love my friends and or certain people, كل واحد ونصيبه and their journey. You can take the camel to the water, you can't force it to drink. But I will. My dad was like, but you still take it to the water. And I try. I still, and I advise, and I'm here, and I'm بعيد, and رشفني ريقي أدمعتنا. But I can't force you to leave a guy. Everyone has their journey. I'm not a savior. It took me a really long time to accept this. So, you know, but I think, so that's a different thing. But we're talking about a healthy form of compromise and sacrifice. And the healthy, you will know. It's going both ways.
Yeah.
And for me personally, this is how I've recognized when you know you're compromising or sacrificing in a healthy way that is beneficial to the relationship and is being appreciated.
Yes.
It doesn't feel like sacrifice. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like compromise.
Yeah.
You're very happy to be open enough to accommodate this person that you love, and you see it happen vice versa. They are also more than happy to oblige. They're more than happy to open that door and course correct certain things to accommodate for you, because
absolutely,
they care. It's just the art of caring.
And it's interesting that you say that, because when I have said on the podcast about submitting in a relationship or surrendering to a relationship when you are in your masculine and then you turn into your feminine, everybody, yallah, in the comment section being like, wow, when you say that you're going to submit, it's like, what is this? Are you a slave to the guy? Like, whatever.
Yeah.
It's the same mentality. It's like, you don't, well, you're not in that situation. So you don't know that you actually want to let yourself go. You want to let your guard down because you trust that person, because you feel safe with that person. And I feel like there is a fundamental difference between those two, because people don't realize that. They're like, oh, in the comment section, it's so easy to turn around and cast judgment on a comment like that because you don't feel safe enough with your partner, honey. You can need to course correct that.
Yeah.
But actually, if you were in a safe space where someone...
I'm so sorry, but ليه إلو عشر دقايق بسك الباب.
He's like, by the way, off screen, it's just like, he's like
it's
closing the door.
It's like, and then
Okay, got my point. Anyways, so how long are we?
No, you were saying they were projecting in those comments, those girls, that they don't feel safe.
Yes. Mm. And my question is like, the only thing you can do is like wish them well, because it's like, I hope one day you get to that stage where you actually feel comfortable enough to surrender to the relationship.
I will say one thing with this concept of a woman submitting to her man. I pray for the day I'm able to submit to a genuine man, because Islam by definition is to surrender. طب أنا لما بسلم أمري لله, who do I trust more than God? That I can literally shut off my brain, shut off my worries, shut off my anxiety in what I think I know is best, and just submit to إرادة ربنا, and whatever he wants will be what's best, because no one is a better planner than him. Do I not want my man to embody that? Do I not want to be able to feel that kind of safety, that kind of gratitude, that kind of protection, that kind of love with my divine man? Is that not what I, as a woman, what would make me happier? Why would I want the feeling that I have with Allah to be different than the feeling that I have with my partner, if my partner is nothing but a mirror and a reflection of the love of God for us?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I pray for the day I can surrender and submit to my man.
Inshallah.
Do you see what I mean?
I see what you mean.
So, but people get worried about this word. Girls get so scared of the term like submission and like the surrender and the slavery. And it's just like, take a look at their lives, okay? Employees. And there's no haram mafia بالشغل. I'm not saying this is عيب. You know what I mean? I was an employee, you know, at a corporation. But you were a slave to the system. You're a slave to your boss. You're a slave to the mood swings of your colleagues. You know, you're a slave to some frat house dude who's trying to make a pass at you. You know what I mean? And then you have to go home, lower back aching. You know what I mean? To go to a gym so you can try to look good or try to whatever, and then go on the weekend and party and drink with your friends, and then feel really crappy about yourself on a Sunday and just cry at home drinking tea with your cat. What are you? Who did you submit to in this case?
Yeah.
And if you're saying, no, it's not submission, it's independence, and it's part of the nitty-gritty of, like, climbing up the corporate ladder, bravo.
Yeah, bravo to all the radical feminists. Thank you very much. I am waiting for the day where I get that call from a bunch of feminists. Like, and I've had a few that have come up to me after, it's like the juiciest feeling ever. When you get a radical feminist who has also drank the Kool-Aid the same way that we did in our time, and we, you know, we can proudly say that that is something that we had to go through.
Yeah.
But then they give you the call, and they were like, you were right. And you're like, I know. And it's such a hard pill to swallow, because the last thing that we want to realize is the fact that the feminism narrative, the girl boss energy, the fact that like we want to be strong, independent women or whatever, it is just, my ladies, toxic masculinity.
Created by toxic white men.
By toxic white men who have designed and curated an entire agenda tied up in a pretty red bow of internalized misogyny served to you on the platter of the male gaze.
Ugh.
There it is. And when you realize that, when you realize what you are fighting for is the ease and the laxness that men have wanted in women so that it can feed their agenda, when you wake up and you realize that that's the truth, you will know everything that you learned about Western feminism is a lie, and everything that you have understood about ancestral South, global South, Arab, Middle Eastern feminism that really talks about the divine feminine, Summa Umakum, Anjed, you will realize that is the truth.
I mean, yeah. Okay. So I wanted to say that with the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam, he really came in and he changed the game for women. He allowed women to inherit.
Sidna Khadija.
He gave women their rights. He changed the game for women. But this isn't known in history. In the Muslim world it is, and granted not with all Muslims, because for some reason we alter history. But the world doesn't want to give credit where credit is due. Mm-hmm. But we know.
Mm-hmm.
And we all do. The credit to my Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam.
Absolutely.
Changed the game for women.
Absolutely.
So I will not give credit to anyone else, especially a concept as demonic as feminism, for why I have my rights. My Prophet told me what I can and cannot do.
Mm.
He told me where I belong. Mm. He told me my purpose. Mm. That's all I need.
That's all you need.
That's all I need. Sidna Khadija.
Sidna Khadija. No, but seriously, it's like a mic drop.
Can I tell you something? Yeah. I'm so sorry I interrupted you, but this concept of Sidna Khadija, because I had mentioned it on multiple podcasts, on yours, on Sheen's, mine.
Yes, you did on mine.
That she was an entrepreneur, and she was the
entrepreneur, divorced, living her best life. Yeah, yes.
Do you know what some of the comments said?
What?
Yeah, but she didn't work in the streets or leave the house. She worked from home. With what Wi-Fi? Lala, sorry.
This is what I mean. You know peasants?
And when I told Baba, he was like, they changed the religion to fit their...
Oh, yeah.
What do you mean, اشتغلت من البيت? Aha, ايش في work from home, COVID?
Literally.
What do you mean?
Literally. But this is the thing. Isn't this the narrative of life that we've been sold? That anyone is going to literally twist a religion to fit their own agenda and their own narrative?
Not just religion, even facts and history. Oh, yeah, for everything.
Sure. Whatever floats your boat, whatever bloats your float. That's it.
Alrighty. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
That's it. That's all I'm going to say.
I think it's a wrap, baby booze.
Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. Sorry, guys. We're going to cut all of that other stuff and send a riff wrap.
Thanks for having me. I said this last time, too.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having
me. Thank you for being here.
Yes. I hope you enjoyed this lovely tale of sounds and music and little jiggies.
We need to do this again.
Yeah, we really do.
Yeah.
It's good.
At home. Yeah.
In your studio.
God is good.
All right. Yalla, ma'a salam, everyone.
All right. Salam alaikum, guys.